You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Bigi on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and on the World Wide Web, every single place on the planet.
Every place that there's internet, that's for sure. www.1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Or if you'd like the archive of our show, which on our website you can search by date, you can search by topic and by name. So that's cedamediainc.com. We share it on there. And of course, all the archives are held right here on 1510wwbc.com. And then, of course, we post all of our blogs, if you will, and podcasts on our social media channels. And those are all on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends or cedamediainc.com.
That's right. And for those listeners who are tuning in today to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time, Ellen O'Neill, myself, and Ali sits here on Monday, and we talk about stuff. We talk about good stuff, bad stuff, any kind of stuff. We talk about kitchen table topics, things that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida, in the world, the USA, other countries, war, peace, financial literacy, authoring a book, selling a book, whatever it is. We have so many nonprofits that come on. Many people are advocates for so many things. And oftentimes we find that people become an advocate after they've been through stuff.
That's right. But we celebrate people that make a difference.
Yeah, we value people. We add value to our lives and other people's lives right here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And I must say, age does bring wisdom. Age brings experience, and age, for me especially, brings a lot of reasoning and understanding. I don't know for you ladies if it does as well.
Yeah, a few aches and pains. Yeah. But other than that, yeah.
Yeah, but I find that I am growing older, bolder, and wiser, and I'm not afraid to say no, which is the most beautiful thing ever.
It is. Freedom.
So today, of course, is no difference on our show. We have a couple of great guests today. Angie Snyder will be calling in the second half of our show to speak about soul injury with the group Opus Peace. So we'll wait to hear from Angie about that. We'll talk about how to anchor our heart and grief and dealing with injury of the soul, which we know so many people, their soul is hurting and they need a little attention. Our first segment is with a return guest. Our friend Siobhan Scott is on the phone. She's calling in from Oregon. And she's a psychotherapist licensed in the state of California and Oregon. I like to say that. I don't know why. Sounds like Oregon.
Oregano.
Oregano. And we are going to speak to her today about New Year resolutions, how to keep the ones you make, and why is it so many people, after the fifth day in the year, they give it up, especially dieting and exercise. That seems to be the two big ones. So, Siobhan, thank you for calling in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and taking time out of your busy day. Talk to us. Tell us, bring us up to speed. What's been going on with you since the last time you called in?
Yeah, well, January, I think, is just about the busiest month for most therapists in private practice because people are doing that, you know, overall healthy thing of looking and reflecting at the year before and looking ahead and thinking, you know, of all the changes they want to make, and they get fired up. They've eaten too much or indulged in too much alcohol around the holidays. They've behaved badly at a New Year's Eve party, and now they're having relationship problems or they had a breakup. So January is a busy, busy month for therapists, and this is a time I really want to try to tune in and help people find a vision for a plan that's actually going to work for them. How many resolutions, if we look at it in percentage, do you think are actually successful, just off the top of your head?
5%.
I would say maybe 8%.
8% is exactly it, yeah.
Wow, and see, there are lottery reasons later
for that.
Well, you know what it is? I think because at the end of the year, people pinpoint what is truly important to them, right? And somebody might say, well, I'd like to stop drinking a lot of alcohol, but let me finish like all these Christmas parties first, right?
Yep. Right.
And then right. They start and they find that they cannot stay, they just can't do it. Their mindset is not there. So how can we help those people that actually did make the resolution? And then, of course, they've got the outside influences, of course, of their friends and family members that are still doing what they don't want to do anymore, right?
Yeah, exactly. I have the three categories that I work with people in when they're trying to make changes. And I'll just give you what those categories are, and then we can break them down and talk with them more. The first is an unrealistic plan. And people often don't understand the complex factors that go into making big changes. And so I always say hope without a realistic plan is just a wish, and you need a plan. The second one is people, all of us, tend to be punitive with ourselves when we're making changes. And being punitive never works. I always talk about we want to love ourselves to health, and a positive approach will make it a plan that we can actually do. I often say exercise is not something you do to punish yourself for what you ate. That is not going to work. That's the wrong way to go in it. You might do that for 2 weeks with that new gym membership and then give up. You've got to find something you love. And then the third problem area is people don't understand the emotional factors that drive our behavior. And whether that's sadness, anxiety, boredom, all the kinds of, you know, complicated deep emotions that drive behaviors that aren't serving us, if we don't tune in on those and address those things, the behavioral changes are not going to stick.
You know, I remember reading once that we could change the world if we change our behaviors towards each other on God's magnificent planet, right? And you hit it right on the head. It's the behavior. Like, what is driving us to do something? And I know with the new year, a lot of people, they fall into traps. And they said that when you're trying to attain a certain goal, you should avoid the traps because your brain does slip into certain, it's trickery. Your brain can trip you and you can say, I'm going to do this, but you know what? There's a trap and you fall into it. How do we help people not to fall into that trap and change their behavior?
Mindfulness is incredibly important, and it's become a word that we hear so much of. It's almost like I think people roll their eyes when they hear mindfulness now.
Pretty much.
But we really, you know, one of the goals in therapy is to help people gain awareness. What am I thinking? What am I feeling? On a deep level from moment to moment throughout the day. Because when we understand our emotions and we understand why we do the behaviors that we do, then we can start to see that we have choices about it. But most people are so busy, so stressed, so preoccupied, so involved in Netflix programs, things they're binging on, or they're self-medicating with alcohol. They're truly not mindful of what's driving their behavior. So it has to start with dedication to a mindfulness practice. I have my clients start journaling because just the act of having to write down what am I thinking, feeling, experience, and then how am I behaving in response to that, having to write that down every day encourages mindfulness. But it's wonderful if people can take a few minutes, even 30 seconds every hour in their busy days and go, what am I feeling here and what do I need to pay attention to? If there's underlying anxiety, depression, you know, grief, those things have to be paid attention to and attended to in some helpful way.
So talk to us a little bit about like incremental changes. So certainly the mindfulness is the big part of it, is to really be aware of what you're doing. But what kind of incremental changes would you encourage people to do And just pick anything. Pick any habit. It, you know, maybe it be dieting or...
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about dieting. I'll use myself as an example. We know diets don't work because how people look at diets is, oh, I'm going on a cruise in 3 months. I need to lose 30 pounds. Okay. Unrealistic goal right off the top. Too big of a chunk. And a diet, when we hear that in the traditional way, it means, oh, well, I'm cutting out all the fun foods. It never works. It's a terrible way to go about it. People may lose some weight initially, but they gain it all back because they haven't changed their lifestyle. When I moved to Oregon a few years ago, about 7 years ago, my lifestyle changed dramatically because when I lived in California, where I'd lived my whole life, I had sunny weather most of the time. It never got below 60 degrees. That was considered cold. And we were out with the dogs and hiking and doing all kinds of things. And so my weight had always been stable. When I moved to Oregon in January, for the first time I lived where it was cold, often 30 degrees outside. It got dark early in winter. I didn't know anyone here, so I didn't have any activities going on, and I was no longer getting any exercise. I was being in my mid-50s, had hormonal changes, and so my environment changed. I was bored in the evening, and so we started, my husband and I, we had ice cream every night. It was just kind of our little treat. It was something to do. We looked forward to it. So what happened? Within 6 months, I gained 30 pounds. My cholesterol shot up dangerously high. I had to start having my cardiac CT scans done because of my high cholesterol, and I became pre-diabetic. That scared me, you know, because I've always really valued my health. And so what I wanted to do was not go on some kind of crash diet because I had the head knowledge that that wasn't going to work. So I started working with a nutritionist and set the goal. There was a clear goal. I wanted to lose 30 pounds, but I wanted to do it in a way that was healthy. So I changed my lifestyle. I knew I had to find an exercise that was pleasurable. Going to the gym and standing there on a treadmill, I call them the gerbil machines, I would hate that. So I've always loved music. I started taking dance classes, Latin dance classes, belly dance classes, flamenco classes, all kinds of dance classes. And that really got me moving, and I started to be more in touch with my body again. I changed my eating habits. I had to stop sugar, which is addicting, so I stopped sugar pretty much cold turkey, but substituted healthier food, more fruit, herbal teas at night that I just found soothing. I don't think depriving ourselves ever works. We have to switch something that's unhealthy for something that's healthy.
It's more like discipline. So it's more like you were specific and you disciplined your mind in order to achieve what you wanted for your body.
Yeah, a lot of it was mindfulness. My evening ice cream was nothing other than boredom. You know, it was boredom. And a little bit of dopamine, because I think we have to understand that we are wired to be pleasure-seeking. And so if I came in with a punitive approach, that I'm just cutting out all this stuff and I'm doing something really strict and going on this really low-calorie diet, you know, that's not healthy. And we don't want to be on a really low-calorie diet because we want to have energy to move and dance or whatever our chosen activity is. So in working with a nutritionist, I just focused in more of the Mediterranean diet, you know, healthier foods. And I kept telling myself, I am feeding myself. I am loving myself into health. And guess what? I lost the 30 pounds. It took about a year. It wasn't 3 months.
Yeah.
And
Siobhan,
I kept it off for
Siobhan,
several years
a lot
now. And my lifestyle changed.
Yeah, Siobhan, a lot of times, and I'm going to be the Mrs. Yeah Butt here this afternoon, but a lot of times it feels that it, with, you know, that it's still, you have to feel punished. There isn't any way, any moving for me, for instance, is not fun. Just not fun. And it hurts, always hurts. So if, you know, I don't know how to, you know, if everything you've tried fails, then what?
Well, you have to love yourself. And I don't, honestly, I will always argue to the death about punishment. You have to find a way to love yourself. And if I was sitting with you coming up with a plan, I would not let you leave until we found some kind of plan. Now, if you're dealing with chronic pain, it's definitely complicated, you know, or physical limitations. It's definitely complicated. But there has to be a way to come in with the attitude of, I am loving myself to health, even if it's hard sometimes. If you have the attitude, the mindset that I am loving myself to health, it's not going to feel like punishment, even if it's painful. I've had to do physical therapy for frozen shoulder. That was very painful. But I did it because I wanted my mobility back. You know, I wanted to have a good life. And I think so many people are coming, I talk to them all day, they're coming into, oh, I hate my body. I've got to turn sexier. I want to fit back into my slinky clothes. But it's coming from a place of self-hatred. They are not loving themselves. And they always fail, and they get very depressed. And so finding a way to frame it as, I am doing this for myself because I love my life. I want to have the best life I can, whatever that looks like. And it looks different for all of us, you know, because we've all got a different set of intentions coming in. But whether it's paying off debt, you know, I deserve to live with less stress from these incredible credit card bills I've got. And it may take 5 years to get the debt paid down. You know, people can have unrealistic expectations about that. Many people, their goal, I hear this all the time, I see a lot of young women, what is your goal? I want to find love this year. So I'm on all the dating apps. I want to find love. I want to get married. And so again, a more realistic expectation is, I'm going to be really careful. I'm going to be really picky. And maybe I'll make a friend. And if I find love, that's terrific, but don't have an unrealistic goal about it, or you're setting yourself up for failure. Yeah. So I think that's when people quit, you know, because their goals are just unrealistic.
Right.
And really, AA is a wonderful model, because how do people conquer alcoholism? It is one day at a time. You know, we can do a hard thing if we're just looking at, I will make this choice for today. And tomorrow,
well, I think it's all about the goals. So many people, their resolutions fail because their goals are too big and too unreasonable. Like, I think what they should probably say is, I want to lose 5 pounds this month.
Exactly.
And I want to cut out from two sweetened, I'm speaking about myself. I said, instead of having two sweetened lows in my coffee, I'll have one. And then I went from one to a half, and I didn't miss the taste over a period of 2 months because I had trained myself. And then I said, okay, like this evening, I'm going out with some friends to an Indian restaurant. So I said, for lunch, I'm just going to have fruit and salad. That's it. Because I want to reward myself to eat my chicken tikka masala later. So I think you kind of, you have to speak to yourself sometime. And like you say, mindfulness and your own mind, and say, well, wait a minute, Sita, you can't have a big 15-calorie lunch and a 15 to 2,000-calorie dinner. And in the meantime, you still have to walk because you're going to be eating later. So I think I'm rewarding myself by disciplining my mind to eat later, but eat less during the day.
Right. Finding those ways to balance things. And everybody's going to have different mental tricks that they use. But the other thing that was very motivational for me is, I have a lot of stairs in my house, and when I was carrying the extra 30 pounds, it was hard, you know, and I'm older, and I don't want to be the little old lady who falls on her stairs and breaks a hip, you know. And so starting to do Pilates and dance and all those things, it really did not feel punitive. It felt like, I am doing this because I have a vision for the person I want to be as I get older. I want to enjoy as much of my life as I can enjoy. And again, that will look different for everyone. So I think it's coming up with an individual plan with small incremental changes, being very specific, being mindful. And then the other thing is not beating ourselves up when we veer off the path, you know, again, because people who, we're all going to screw up. We're all going to veer off the path, whether it's a spending binge online or whatever. Every now and then our emotions get away from us and we do something that we regret. But that's okay. Again, it's one day at a time. And rather than just setting an intention every January 1st, we set the intention for our day every day and try to make those choices good.
And how do you feel about, like, selecting the big why? Like, for instance, you've, you know, yours was when you moved from California to Oregon, you'd seen a big difference and you wanted to get back to how you felt before. And I have, you know, again, some of the similar things. I actually tell my doctor, you know, before we talk about cortisone shots in my ankle, why don't you just tell me to lose 20 pounds? Because if I hear you say it, it'll motivate me a little bit more, because there's a big why, right? Because now I won't have to get a different procedure done because I am overweight, or whatever the big why is. What type of conversations do you have with people about the big why? I've heard that a lot in vision boarding. You know, when people do vision boards, they say, you know, always have your big why. But I'm not sure that everybody buys that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I've never heard that term before. I've never heard that term.
Like big fat hairy deal or something like that, or big fat hairy goal. BHAG, I think is what it's called in some motivational books.
The one I like is to develop a realistic vision of what I want my life to look like in the future. And that may be a year in the future, it may be 10 years in the future. And find a role model, you know, somebody that this is a person that I have a dear friend that I just admire. She's 70 and she can still turn cartwheels and change. If she gets a flat tire on her car, she changes it herself. And she's about 5 feet tall. And she's just this incredible woman. And she's always been my role model and enjoys her life so much and has a healthy attitude. And so find a role model. Imagine what that life will look like for you in the future, and then ask yourself, what am I doing now that will take me to that goal, or what am I doing now that's going to keep me from preventing that goal? And so I just sort of use that kind of visualization for it.
So
I think it helps.
Hold on one second, Siobhan. I just wanted to take a quick station break to tell our listeners who we're speaking with, because what you're doing for us here is awesome. The first month of the year, so many people make resolutions and they break them, and only 6 to 8% actually keep them. So we're speaking with Siobhan Scott. She's a licensed psychotherapist both in California and Oregon. In her 30-year career, she has assisted thousands of clients of all ages. Many have been victims or perpetrators of violent crime. So later we'll ask you really quick to just give us your website and all that. But, you know, I wanted to ask you, I know there's something called the power of the 0 to 10 rule, and it's all about the law of specification, which includes a super clear and a granular use of so many things that people talk about. Can you talk a little bit about the law of specification?
I have never heard of that. I have no idea.
You know what?
No idea.
You know why? Because
coming out of pop psychology. No.
You know why? Because we research a lot of stuff for you coming on the show, and I learned a lot of stuff, and it says that the law of specification, the brain starts to form a plan, and to achieve it, creating new connections between its different parts, it's like building a roadmap. So I guess it's
sure.
The same thing you're saying. Is
it's
where,
just be specific.
Yeah, where you wake up and you make a plan to follow the plan,
right.
And then, yeah, you have your mindfulness in your heart and everything.
Well, and there's one extra layer to it. It's saying the non-specification one would be saying, I want to lose weight. Being specific would be, I want to lose 20 pounds in 30 days, you know, whatever the, you know, where that time, you know, you have that time relevance, like
measurable.
A SMART goal.
Right. It's like,
you know,
I guess it's like messages that you're sending to your muscles and your heart and other part of your body, like what you want to do. You want to be disciplined, right?
Yeah.
So, Siobhan, you know, many people, the word diet, what does the word diet actually mean? Because people hear the word diet and some run towards that word. Some people run away from it. Some people scoff at the idea that they have to give up their good-tasting chicken tikka masala. I hear the word diet, and I'm like, God, no, I just can't give up my food. You know, so talk to our listeners about the mind-body connection, and to be specific about what have we really given up?
Well, when I hear the word diet, I hear it the way I grew up in the 60s, you know, with all the fad diets. And I mean, we still have fad diets that come out. And they're all about losing things. They're about restricting things. They're about, I think, not a positive approach to eating. And I think the proper use of the word diet is simply our habits. It's what we use to take care of our bodies, how we ingest food. And we live in a culture with incredibly toxic food choices around us, lots of fat, lots of sugar, lots of fast food.
And salt, and lots of salt, lots sending people's blood pressure up. Oh my God, I can't speak enough about what salt is doing to our country.
Yeah, it's really horrifying, and the health consequences are real. So we now have had for decades this culture where people eat incredibly unhealthy food. They eat for emotional reasons. They eat for boredom. They don't understand that. So they go on fad diets. They lose a bunch of weight, and they do the back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, which is a terrible thing for your body. So in my mind, I wish we could just change the language around a bit and just look at food as something. It's a way of we find our best self. It's how we nurture our health, and that we love ourselves enough to eat the things that are going to be healthy for us and help us live that long, good life that we want to live as well as we can.
So would you say that to celebrate small successes, that it's better to do it like in a group? Like when someone is celebrating a lifestyle change and they want to have an audience, that's somebody that's going to say, good for you, great job, that's amazing. Yeah. Right. Do you say that either you get a partner, a good friend to work out with you or to give you that pat on the back? Or is it easier just to go to a group and have those small successes recognized?
Yeah, it's powerful to have a group support. Some people do it with a friend. Some people have a coach, you know, whether it's a nutritionist or an exercise person they lift weights with at the gym. But having some kind of social reinforcement is powerful. And again, it's the power of AA. You know, there's nothing truly magical about the 12 steps or the 12-step programs, but they know how to help people make these changes. And I think group support can be very helpful with that. And there's so many things you can do online. I mean, Weight Watchers is online right now, so people can you know, get it fairly easily.
I guess it all comes down to somebody making your life feel valuable on planet Earth and appreciating you as a human soul. And you do so much on your Facebook to appreciate all of us. I want to thank you for everything you post. Makes us laugh, and it breaks the day up for me anyways. If I'm having a bad day and I look at your Facebook, I'm like, oh my God, this is what I needed for today. And in addition,
that makes me so happy.
I love you for it. And I'm like, I'm so grateful that we met, and that, you know, even if it's online on Facebook, but it's wonderful.
Oh,
I know we'll meet in person one day. I have a vision board for that. But
I love it.
Thank you. And the other thing is, I wanted our listeners to know that in addition to you being a psychotherapist and having your own private practice and helping so many people, you're also an author. So if you'd be so kind with the last remaining minute or so, tell us the names of your book and where someone can find you or your books if they're interested.
Sure. Three books out and many others in my head that I just have not had time to write yet. The first one is about video game addiction. It's called Game Addiction, The Experience and the Effects. And that grew out of my experiences as a mom with excessive gaming kids who are now adults, but that's a long story. But I wrote that back in 2009. And then I wrote one with the goal of helping to prevent school shootings and other mass shootings, and that's The Mind of Mass Killers, Understanding and Interrupting the Pathway to Violence. And then the most recent one is called Wounded, The Forgotten Survivors of Gun Violence. And all of that information, including a bunch of articles I've written on general psychology topics, all can be found at my website, and that is simply my name, which is a little tricky to spell. It's S-H-A-V-A-U-N Scott, S-C-O-T-T, SiobhanScott.com.
You know, when you call in next time, I would like you to speak to us. Lately, I've been reading where so many parents no longer believe in sleepovers. And I think it ties right into the video games and the kids staying up late and nobody getting enough sleep. And they're learning things from other people that their parents probably would teach them. And I think what you're doing in thinking about these things in your head anyway, about video games and all that, it is affecting our young people. It is affecting our nation.
Yeah.
And you probably see so many people with emotional, mental, physical problems that I think it's great to have a psychotherapist such as yourself. We are so grateful that you take the time to call in. I would like to have you call back in, and if you can, let's talk a little bit about parenting today and why so many parents are actually taking a stance against social media and sleepovers and all these things.
Yeah, it's a hard time to be a parent. So yes, be happy to have that discussion.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And folks, I will make sure that all of Siobhan Scott's information is on our website, as well as all of our social media places. And we're going to take a quick minute to listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome to
Are you
Met
longing
Fast
for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
John Coff Financial.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in the very sunny Cocoa, Florida, but it's kind of chilly outside.
It's a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day. That's right. We woke up to a great day. Every day you wake up is a great day.
You got it.
We're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and everywhere all over the world, Ellen.
On the World Wide Web, you can hit that 1510wwbc.com and hit the Listen Live button on that page. Or, again, all of our archives are also housed there as well. You can hit by on demand and choose by date. Of course, we share all of it on our social media as well as our websites, which are SitaMediaInc.com and Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Right. Ellen, we had a great first segment about making resolutions for the new year and actually keeping them. And it's amazing to know that 8% of the people out of 100% that makes a resolution actually keep them.
That's right.
And the lifespan is 5 days when people try it and give it up.
Well, it's the same, you know, that 80-20 rule, the, you know, there's a whole lot of, rules in life that, you know, there's a small percentage of people that do a lot of the work, and there's a small percentage of people that do a lot of work for themselves.
That's
right. So it kind of works out that way.
Well, in our second segment, we're talking with one of our guests who had called in before a couple of times. We're speaking with Deborah Grossman, and she is with Opus Peace. And I tell you, Ellen, when you learn about what Deborah is doing and all the awesome thing that her and Angie Snyder is doing, it makes you feel like there's so many wonderful people still left on the earth that's trying to help so many of us to center ourselves and think about our soul, where we're going, the people, the company we keep, and what we can do to help so many souls that are hurting on planet Earth. So we'll just say welcome and hello, Deborah, and thank you for calling in.
Well, thank you, Sika and Ali and Ellen. I appreciate you wanting to have me back to hear more about soul, especially self-compassioning and how that relates to New Year's resolutions, and also what a big event, public service event that's coming up on February 2nd that everybody can participate in.
Well, and you know, one of the nice things about the things that you do, I know you do events in person, but you also do stuff virtually online where the entire world can log on and learn about soul injury. But before we talk about the event, tell our listeners a little bit about what soul injury is about and Opus.
Well, Opus Peace is a not-for-profit organization, and our mission is to help people heal the relationship that they have with themselves. And in the midst of all the chaos that each of us often experience, especially in our busy, busy world, creating that inner peace is a very precious commodity these days. So we will... One of the things we're going to focus on, that we often focus on, is what we call self-compassioning. And we will be doing a webinar on February 2nd that includes self-compassioning.
So, Deborah, I know I've seen you in person and I've listened to you in person, and you make such an impact with all of us who we listen to you, because we know that grief is universal. And people grieve differently. Our souls are affected differently. Would you be so kind to share with our listeners the actual Opus Peace vision for the world?
Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, you know, our programs are designed to help heal soul injuries. So, and we define soul injury as when you get separated from your own sense of self, when you get separated from your real self. And your real self is not just the quote-unquote best version of yourself that everyone talks about in New Year's resolutions, for example. We're talking about the best version of yourself, and your real self also includes the worst version of yourself and everything in between. It's being able to open up to the full spectrum of who you are and who you are not, and being able to reach out to those parts of self that we all typically, you know, we don't like something about ourselves, you know, and we don't want to admit something, we want to be in denial, you know, we stuff it in our shadow, for example. So at Opus Peace, rather than trying to be stronger and more resilient and make all these self-determined goals on January 1st, our approach is different. It's more about removing the barriers that are separating from who you already are, the grace of your being that is already there. So we believe that there are three main causes, main barriers that keep you from accessing your real self. And those three barriers are unmourned loss and hurt, unforgiven guilt and shame, and fear of helplessness and loss of control.
I see Allie shaking her head here. You want to jump in on that one?
Oh, it sounds like you're talking directly to me. That's all. Go ahead.
Well, think about it. You know, there's so much pop psychology that really focuses on being your best self and be strong. And
right.
Just be resilient. And, you know, you tell hurting people, oh, just be more resilient. And it sort of implies that if they were more resilient, they would be able to withstand the trauma that they experienced or the hardship that they've gone through. So really what we focus on with self-compassioning is, instead of, you know, numbing your pain, to learn how to mourn your pain. Instead of hiding your guilt, to use your guilt to learn how to forgive yourself and others. Instead of being ashamed of not being good enough, to releasing your fear of who you are and who you're not. And instead of trying to control things that you have no control over, to learning how to let yourself feel your helplessness and your loss of control.
Right.
See, people don't talk about that type of approach. And it's a shame, because all those things are very, very real.
Right.
And I know in a world...
And would you say that a lot of this does stem from our childhood and the way we were raised and the environment in which we were raised? Because so many cultures do say, you know, just suck it up. That's how it is. They don't want to talk about stuff, especially when it comes to guilt and shame and how you feel. It is swept under the rug so many times, because it is almost that particular injury, whether seen or unseen, will hurt so many people, and yourself.
Yes. Well, you know, you're really talking about, a lot of cultures are stoic cultures. American cultures are that way, in the sense of, you know, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Right.
For 30 years in hospice at the VA, so dying veterans, and even on their deathbed, these veterans would want to be stoic. So it absolutely, stoicism is very valued in many cultures, not just the American culture or military culture. And yeah, stoicism is important when you're in an unsafe, untrustworthy environment. You don't really, showing feelings sometimes can be detrimental if you're with in an environment or with another person who, you know, is not trustworthy or is abusive, those types of things. The problem is when that stoic wall separates us from our own sense of self. The problem is when a stoic wall separates us from someone who is trustworthy. The problem comes when we don't know how to let down a stoic wall. So, you know, stoicism is important, but it's important that we use it more like a door that we can open and close as needed, depending on the safety of the environment, as opposed to a stoic wall that ends up isolating us and disconnecting us, because that's really ends up becoming a soul injury. And you're absolutely right, Sita. It often starts in childhood, and what becomes the family culture often gets transferred all the way up into adulthood, and then we transfer it to the next generation. And we have generational soul injuries that get created inadvertently and insidiously, but no less damaging.
Yeah. So I think one of the missions of Opus Peace is to provide a meaningful experience, a journey, so that people could search their own soul and come up with a way to heal themselves by listening to your seminars, by learning and growing. And one of the things I love about what you did is the anchoring of our hearts. So can you speak with our listeners a little bit about the how you speak about, when I saw you in person and you spoke about how to anchor our heart, it really touched me. So can you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, you're bringing up several important things. One being, our educational programs at Opus Peace are designed to not just give you information and concepts for your head, although that's important. We also design stories to touch people's heart, and that's really important. But more than both of those is designing, as you said, a meaningful experience, so a person can experience themselves, can get real with themselves, you know, to have an intimate relationship with themselves. So we have designed several self-help tools to help people do exactly that so that they can heal the relationship themselves. And one of the most important tools, and this is becoming well-researched and well-published, and we have another journal article coming out in just a couple of months on the anchoring your heart and how powerful and effective that tool is. So when you think about it, when you're anxious and upset, your energy comes up kind of high. Your energy's up high in your head, and you breathe fast and shallow, and your voice comes up like mine is right now. But when you're calm and relaxed, your energy comes down low, and you're more connected and, as you said, centered within yourself. So if you get some upsetting news, if you get bad news, what do you unconsciously, automatically do?
You'll shut down.
Grab that. Your hand will come right over. Why? Because you're anchoring your heart to try to stay centered when your heart's kind of jumping up out of your chest with anxiety or what have you. Mm-hmm. So anchoring your heart and learning how to retrain the brain so it doesn't just have these knee-jerk reactions to things going on in the environment that make you anxious, but to be able to give you some pause, create space for grace, create time, just that little few seconds to connect with your real self, to get real with what's going on. So we encourage people to practice the anchor in your heart about, a few times a day, just to reconnect with yourself, get real with yourself, let the facade down. No one even needs to know you're really doing it. We also encourage people to use it when they see, when their breath is taken away with beauty and awesome stuff, inspiring stuff, to anchor your heart. Let that really sink in so that your brain can really absorb that. And to especially use it when you're feeling hurt or jealous or angry or any of those quote-unquote uncomfortable feelings, because the goal is to allow pain and peace to sit side by side together instead of being fearful of feeling distressing feelings, to come to a place where you can be open to the full spectrum of human feelings that we all experience.
Deborah, I think when you speak, I'm seeing you sitting in a classroom with 5-year-olds and 4-year-olds and teaching our children from little how to cope with anger and fear and jealousy and hate and being different. Because honestly, I feel like when you grow up and you're an adult, you learn all these things, but sometimes a lot of people learn how injured their souls are too late. But wouldn't it be wonderful if a program such as yours was incorporated in all schools all over the United States, and teachers and students and parents and everyone could do this for even 10 minutes a day and learn? Because I think it would actually decrease the prison population, and it would help so many people with mental health and anxiety and things like that. Have you ever thought about reaching out to the educational system, people here in the United States, and talking with them? Because what you talk about is healing people from inside out and helping us in our environment, how to live, how to grow, how to be a better human being.
Yeah, well, just being willing to be real, really. But yeah, if you think about it, Sita, how would the world be different if we were not afraid of emotional pain? How would the world be different? And you're identifying some of the things. One of the things you just said when you talk about schools, one of our founders, her daughter-in-law is a school teacher in Canada, and she has is teaching her students about anchoring heart. I'm not sure what grade she teaches, but at any rate, yeah, Sheila has, her daughter-in-law is teaching it in the Canadian classroom. So you're absolutely right. We'd love to get this in schools. Children, I have certainly taught it one-on-one with several children, and they do it easily, they do it naturally, and it would be liberating, I guess is the word I would say, that because children do know how to express hurt. You know, they cry. You know, a small child cries when they're hurt. And then somewhere along the line, that gets snuffed out. And it's like, oh, whatever you do, don't cry. Don't make me upset because you're crying and you're disturbing my life, you know, so to speak.
Yeah, so how do we tell our ego how to stop covering the pain of anger and fear and shame? Because that seems to be one of the things that so many adults walk around with, things that should have been addressed when they were children. They're carrying that pain with them all the way to the job, all the way to flying in an aircraft, all the way on a vacation, all the way in whatever they're doing. And these feelings of these emotional upheaval in their lives, it doesn't end just because they're on a vacation. They still have it. How do we help people to with that part of their lives before they could enjoy the other parts of their lives?
Well, I think that the simple answer that's often hard to enact is they have to learn how to comfort themselves without numbing agents. I mean, the prolific use of numbing agents is rampant. And when I talk about numbing agents, I'm not just talking about alcohol and drugs and those and video games and gambling and those obvious forms, but I mean perfectionism, you know, watching, you know, using TV or any of the social media stuff to numb out. There's nothing wrong with TV. There's nothing wrong with social media. There's nothing wrong with shopping. But when we use it to numb out any emotional distress so that we don't have to feel it because we're afraid of it, we're afraid that our society promotes just feel good all the time. You can have it all. We have a very abundant, affluent society nowadays, and it perpetuates the idea of you don't have to feel any pain. Why would you ever want to do that? You can have it all. You can do it all. You can be anything, and you can just, you know, you don't have to feel any emotional pain. So get over it. It's in the past.
So one of the cool things, one of my friends here in town has a company called Time to Sign, and she teaches sign language to young children, and specifically for children with bad behaviors in the classroom. And she's teaching them all of the feeling signs so that way, because there's, you know, there's the parts of the brain that are emotion. I always said in my adult life, I always said when emotions are high, intelligence is really low. But if you can get people out of an emotional state to be able to describe logically why they're feeling the way that they do, I always thought that was a great switch to get them out of that emotional state so that they could really tell you what the problem was and logically kind of work through that process. And I thought, what a cool thing for children, but how could something like that be incorporated in adults where, you know, not to numb the pain, don't not have that initial reaction of crying or whatever the emotion is that you're having, but then to be able to switch off and maybe get into a little more like cognitive behavior therapy that you say, like, okay, yes, I'm sad now, but it's not going to last forever. And, you know, and this is how I'm going to work through it, or this is how I'm going to process it. What are some of the other kind of tricks or things that Opus Peace is doing to help in that kind of a realm?
Well, I think that the short answer is ventilating feelings only helps temporarily. So, yes, it's important to ventilate feelings, but what you're describing, what's way more important is to be able to connect with the part of self that is generating that feeling. That's what no one's talking about. That's that Opus Peace felt. It's not just about feeling feelings. Even though feelings are real, whatever you're feeling is real, that's true. But there's a part of self that's generating that feeling. And so you want to be able to connect with that part of self. And there's a lot of tools to help do that. But what I see in the pop psychology is we don't talk enough about that. We talk more about just the value of feelings and ventilating feelings and those kinds of things. And obviously, that's extremely important. But that's just the first step. Feelings kind of give you the weather report of your interior self, that there's something that's generating that weather, and there's where the focus needs to be. There's where the love and the tenderness, every part of you, even the ugly parts of yourself, need love, tenderness, and attention. and those ugly parts of ourselves that generate anger and hate and everything else, jealousy, whatever it might be, they especially need love and attention and tenderness.
So in other words, you're teaching us how to be our own best friend and love ourselves. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Deborah Grassman, and she's providing us with the tools to create a safe environment for ourselves and for others. Now, you are having an event coming up, and talk to our listeners a little bit about how they could sign up for the event and where it's going to be taking place and all that good stuff. We have 2.5 minutes left.
Yes, well, this is a worldwide public service event that Opus Peace puts on every year. It's called our annual Anchor Your Heart Day. So if you can just imagine people from around, hundreds of people around the world taking time to just get still and develop a collective stillness, because a collective stillness is really, really rare and precious in today's rushed society. And we will take about 3 minutes to collectively let ourselves feel whatever we are feeling or trying not to feel even, but just to really get real within our own hearts. And it is so powerful to be able to do that together, to cultivate internal peace as a collective. Now, prior to that, that's going to happen at 3 o'clock on February 2nd. But we're putting on at 2 o'clock, we will be doing a one-hour webinar on self-compassioning, which is exactly what you and I have been talking about for the last several minutes. And you'll notice it's not self-compassion. We use the term self-compassioning as a verb, as a dynamic process of how do you connect with the part of self generating those feelings. How do you heal the relationship you have with yourself? Those are the tools we will be talking about from 2 to 3, and then we'll do a worldwide. We have organizations, we have companies that have all their employees, you know, there together, either individually or in a room full, that will be participating in. And there'll be several hundred people from all over this country and internationally as well. So I hope your listeners will be letting other people know. And Angie's going to tell you how to sign up.
Okay. So you can find the information on our website, www.opuspeace.org, under the events section. And if you're on social media, the Opus Peace Soul Injury page also has the link for registration. And I will make sure that Sita has it to put on her website as well.
Right, and we will abide and reckon and behold. That's what we're all going to be doing that day. So give us the website one more time.
The website is www.opuspeace.org, and you'll find the information under the events section.
And Sita, I want you to know that after the event, everybody will has access to an 11-minute video on anchoring your heart. They'll be given a 14-minute video that outlines the self-compassioning process. They'll be given a video slideshow with the Nashville artist Karen Taylor Good song about being real. And we have downloadable how-to cards for anchoring your heart and for self-compassioning.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, ladies, for joining us today and telling us all about Opus Peace. We had Siobhan Scott on as our first guest and talking about our New Year's resolution. So make sure that you re-listen to this great podcast here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll make sure it's all posted on all of our social media. And then, of course, on our website, SitaMediaInc.com. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. Please join us each and every week on Monday from 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time till 2 p.m. here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, 1510 WWBC.